We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Based on the Wired cover story by Jason Parham and directed by Princess Penny, executive producer of Insecure, Black Twitter, A People's History tells the story of how black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change, while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. If you were there for Meet Me in Temecula or Thanksgiving Clapback, you need to see this series. If you weren't there, time to dive in. Watch how Black Lives Matter grew and gained force because of the voices on Black Twitter, bringing these issues to the forefront like never before. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History, is now streaming on Hulu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Yep, it's the world's most dangerous morning show, The Breakfast Club. Charlamagne Tha God, Jess Hilarious, DJ Envy is off. But we got two special guests, man. Tony Lewis Jr. and Tony Lewis Sr. If you've been paying attention to their journey, then you know we're about to have a great conversation. How y'all brothers doing, man?
Amazing, man.
Amazing.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Tell them the story that you've been telling for all these years, Tony.
Yeah, man. My father went away when I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. Got life without parole. You know, that journey lasted 34 years through tirelessly fighting for his freedom. Mm. You know, coming up here 5 years ago, you know, doing stuff all across the country, doing stuff in D.C., but also utilizing our struggle to help, you know, so many other families that was in a similar situation, being inspiration and hope. And then finally, you know, due to so much advocacy, my brother Pusha T connected me with Brittany K. Barnett, who I call our modern day Harriet Tubman, and her organization, Buried Alive Project.
Yeah, Buried Alive.
Shout out to people like Corey Jacobs, who also a part of that.
Sharonda Jones.
Yeah, Sharonda Jones. Yeah. And eventually that unlocked those gates. And 65 days ago, my father stepped out of federal prison.
Mm. Have you adjusted yet, my brother?
I'm trying. Yeah, it's getting there. The technology, that's kind of... the whole city's changed, gentrification, or white people. What happened to Black D.C.?
I think it's any context for that, though, really, right? We live in the most gentrified place in America. DC? Even 5 years, yeah, DC. Okay. And 5 years ago when I was up here, I talked a bit about that, right? Mm-hmm. But he left in 1989, 34 years ago. So we
when it was really Chocolate City.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. And our block, man, like our neighborhood, everything has just really changed a lot. So for him to walk into that, is that's all. Yeah. And where is everybody also who were there before? That's the other question, you know? So sorry, but you know, I just think that's important, you know?
I can definitely tell that he's still like, hold up, what's going on? Because even when I walked up to him and spoke to me, like, y'all, you might want to chill out, relax, don't walk up all happy like that, you know, but you can give me a hug. And look, you know, he don't even give hugs regular. He like, nah, don't touch too much. Hey. And then he'd put the two fingers on the back like, tap, tap. Look, all right, now back off, you know what I mean?
Hey, Charlamagne, I was telling her, I'm watching her from prison. I know who she was.
Okay.
Wow, I appreciate that.
Big fan of hers.
I love
funny
that.
As hell.
Thank you. And you're not from Baltimore. Y'all right there,
Baltimore,
DC.
You right
I'm
right there.
Right there.
Yeah. You know what, too? You know, it's crazy because, you know, I think what's beautiful about the DC Baltimore relationship has really grown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through people like you.
Yeah, thank you.
People like and really a lot of it got to do with like, you know, people in the feds, you know, when he was locked in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Dudes like Stokey and D. Watkins, that's like my
brother.
Absolutely, brothers
shout out to Stokey, yes.
And then my guy, so through that kind of work and trying to help out shared community, and I think the whole idea of the DMV, which DC people weren't necessarily with that from the beginning, Baltimore people weren't with that from the beginning, but our region, even down to the 757. You know, it's starting to really show that there's a lot of beautiful things coming out of our area. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the story a little bit, man. Tony Sr., you served 34 years for your role in one of the largest, most notorious crack cocaine crime rings in that region. Like, what got you into the game?
Poverty.
Mm.
Poverty, single-parent household. You know, like not regular, but back in my whole street was basically, that's what it was, at least on my side of the street.
Right.
Welfare, poverty, drugs, violence, the whole block.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you knew, that's all you saw.
Mm-hmm.
That was the job. Like, you know, like people say about getting a job, that was the job. We knew nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a culture. And the poverty is what led to me selling drugs and, you know, trying to help my family, mother, single parent, sisters, brothers, friends, and it just grew. And you as a culture, you know what I'm saying? And you know, that's what.
Did you ever think it was gonna get that big? Cause y'all, you know, I always say in the '80s, y'all were like early investors in like a tech company or something. Mm, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like y'all were the ones who really, really got it.
Yeah, see, I never set forth in it to become big or drug. I was trying to just survive, help my family eat, mom pay the bills, you know, light gas get cut off from time to time, the welfare check ain't last, you know, like it, you know, so that's where I got in. And you know, like I said, it was a culture, and always worked hard at whatever I did. So selling drugs, I worked hard, and I came up, and I worked hard, and I seen the money, and it kept, you know, wanting to get more and more. But not to glorify it at all, but back then, that was the culture.
What's the most you had at one time?
I had a few million in cash.
Damn!
You know? And back then, that was a lot. You know, I know now it's a little less, but yeah, got to get a few million in my early 20s. Wound up getting arrested at 26. Mm. And that was it.
Yeah.
Done.
That was it.
Until you had like, 2 years of balling? A year of balling?
No, actually more than, because I started like when I was 14. You know, but it's, of course, small stuff, and you know, but the big stuff came, you know, later, money wise and everything else. But marijuana from the beginning, and you know, stuff like, you know, small stuff like that. But then our block, you know, turned from the marijuana to cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not my making, you know, other people making, but
Ronald Reagan.
Thing. Yeah. Ronald Reagan, CIA,
couple we million. Right there too.
Yeah,
right?
Few million.
Wow. You see the dome of the Capitol. We 10 blocks, 12 blocks from the Capitol where our street is. You feel what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think that really is, it's something to that though, to say that, right?
Yeah.
And you can stand on our block on any corner in DC and the presidential motorcade might ride by, like in a literal sense. Yeah. That is the backdrop to, you know, our story. And I grew up on that same block.
Same block.
In a more even deadlier time, because now we in the heart of the crack epidemic. You feel what I'm saying? Yeah. When I'm coming up in the 90s, you know what I mean? And we the murder capital of the United States, and you know, it's just like complete destruction and just desperation. And I'm just so happy that I had him from prison. It's crazy too, is when they got locked up, man. You know, being 9 years old, I'm the only child. You know what I'm saying? From the court stuff is on the news every day. Then they went to, they was getting preferential treatment at DC jail, so they go to Quantico Marine Base.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So you go visit at the cell, like we had the Marine Base, M16s and Marines. It's not a prison, and I'm that's embedded in my brain to this day. Then you go shipped out to Long Park, California for the next 13 years.
Right.
And I'm just sharing that to talk about the, how that is, and I'm on that block. He 3,000 miles away. My mother started to deal with severe mental illness that she still, you know, battles to this day. So I lost my both my parents in the way that I had them prior, and had to navigate through that, which we just described. But I had him on the other end of that phone and in them letters, you know, every day telling me to, like, make better choices, you know, doing everything that he could from prison to ensure that I don't, you know what I mean, following them same footsteps. But at the end of the day, I'm growing up in the exact same thing, you know. That's why I wake up feeling like the luckiest man alive.
And even with all of that, you could have still took another turn. What made you not turn Tariq St. Patrick with all this?
Yeah, for real. You know what I'm saying? Now, listen, you know, when I be watching that joint, though, like, for real, though, all jokes aside, when I be, because where we come from, it ain't nothing else. Just like, it's nothing else. All my uncles, all his friends, them people ain't leave with him. They was still around. And people did give me, you know, so much information of, like, Slug. That's what everybody called me. Slug, do something different. You got something different. I had a strong grandmother. My aunts, you know, and other dudes on the, in the community in general just wanted me to do something different, but nobody could show me how. That's where the problem came in. Do something different, but who
and
else? Who
all this pressure no on you.
So that's what, but I was able to, you know, by the grace of God, I was able to kind of, you know, find my way. But what really saved me, it wasn't linear like that, though, Jess. What happened was when I was about 20, I still ain't, you know what I mean? What I'm going to do? I don't, you know, but I got a job doing peer-to-peer violence interruption. Like a job, basically, the people closest to the problem that can reach their peers. You know what I mean? I fell in love with the work, and that saved my life. That's what really, you know what I mean, put me on this path that I've been on for the last 23 years. You know what I'm saying? As an activist, aside from, you know, getting them out of jail, but being sort of the leading voice. I stand at the intersection of, like, poverty, mass incarceration, and gun violence in my city. You know?
What was the turning point in the, like, the Free Tony Lewis movement? Like, when did you start seeing hope?
I always felt like I was going to make it happen. But the biggest turning point, I think when you know, through the years, like, people like my brother Wale, a lot of other guys, you know, helping and pushing.
But when
Pusha introduces us to Brittany Barnett, right? We had other turning, but when Pusha makes that intro, he made the song "Coming Home" with Lauryn Hill, which he mentions pops in. That's when her legal prowess, and then she connected with a law firm, Aaron Fox Schiff in D.C. to be able to represent him. I felt hopeful, but look, the first motion that she files, though, his judge, he gets denied for it, though. You know, when I did the Free Tony Lewis rally, we got like 1,000 people out in D.C. At Black Lives Matter Plaza. And we filed a motion after that, and that motion get denied. I was like, man, but Britt was like, nah, it's all right. Tony, we going back in. And we just kept, you know, kept pushing. You know what I mean? I kept bugging, you know, you and everybody else. Like, let me come up. Let me talk about trying to, you know what I mean? Because, you know, I felt like I've started a family, man. You know, now I grew up, right? But also, I got married. I had, you know what I'm saying, my two daughters. And I didn't want my babies keep visiting no federal prison. I'm saying? Yeah, I grew up like that.
You know?
And then we hadn't seen them since when COVID hit. We didn't go see what Pop since.
Three years.
Yeah, we ain't even going to visit. Because he was like, nah. He like, nah, I don't even want to see them in here again. Like, I'm going to see them when I come home.
Right.
Still ain't thinking.
Even though I ain't know. Yeah, it was just good energy and hope. Prayers, you know, and faith in you, son, you know.
And we you know, we did something I think is important too that gave me hope. My father's, you know, pops, we got different personalities. He's more introverted than I. When he started running this program called Young Men Incorporated, a guy named Dominic Henry, started. Dominique. There was a former federal inmate came back in to do this program. Mm. And a dude, Peanut King out of Baltimore, was co-chair with him.
Peanut King.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. But they ran, they was mentoring.
Just don't know who that is.
Yo, chill. Yeah, yo, I know.
Oh, she from the county. She ain't from the county for real. I'm sorry. My bad.
Not talking about Nut, man.
But yeah, talking about Nut.
Yeah, Nut, man. Yeah, that's my man's P.
Yeah, that's right. So, Pop, can you tell me a little bit about why am I, like, you know more. I mean, you can explain it better than me.
Yeah, it was a mentoring, a peer-oriented mentoring group, I would say. Mm. They got the most high-profile guys in the prison to be a part of it. Most of the young men look up to the most high-profile guys in the prison. And I was reluctant at first to take part in it, really, because I was doing some other things. And I'm always mentioring, I'm doing this on a regular anyway, and it's consuming, because the young guys always want to talk. They want to bring you all the problems, and the girl problems, all the problems. Yeah. I'm like, what about my problem, youngest? But it's all good. But anyway, no, I took part, and it really was good. It was gratifying. Son, you got to come in. Council members came in.
Yeah.
We had it rocking and rolling. So man, we had a good warden who was pro programming.
Sure.
You know, he was with it.
Which you don't always get.
Yeah, that you
and
don't
to come
get.
Into federal prison in the ways that I was able to come in and collaborate with my father.
Mm. Yeah, that was that.
That don't happen in federal. I don't know people out there really understand. Right. That just does not happen. And I also came in and interviewed him and did a PSA to the young men in our community about putting the guns down for the mayor, right?
Yeah, that was
so. But when I saw him opening up and saw that, like, the work that I was doing on the outside, we'd always connected on it, like helping the guys in there, their children, their children out in the community, I would help. But for him to take it by the horns it made me go even harder, because I'm like, he's even growing in a different way that wasn't really, you know what I'm saying, happening before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that made me keep pushing.
Yeah, we can't leave out a big homie up here, Silborn Waite. He was a big part of it. Silk,
yeah, yeah.
Silk was a big part. Timothy Williams, Tiny. James Kirby Burks, these good men still in prison with life sentences, that they working every day, no matter what the weight they got on their back, they helping these young guys not to come back out and pick these guns back up. That's, that means a lot, man. But people don't know.
Sure.
They don't know. So I got to try to shed some light on them guys. Man.
What was the legislation that actually got his sentence overturned?
The First Step Act.
First Step Act. Oh, okay.
It was a Trump era reform.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, back 5 years ago in the interview, I was in, you know, because I helped advocate for that as well, right? But at the time, we didn't even think that he would be able to benefit from the First Step Act. But obviously, other stuff that that I advocated for, you know, was about not us. It was about the great and other American families all across this country to benefit, you know what I'm saying? So the First Step Act, you know, and shout out to you know, Cut 50, Dream Corps, Van Jones, and all that crew. And Hakeem Jeffries also, who introduced the bill, but Trump signed it into law. Probably like 20,000 people have come home off that reform, and you know, something that's really, really important to us and what we plan on working on together moving forward. We actually got a meeting tomorrow in the same vein, is that, you know, the Biden administration,
Joe Biden, President Biden, listen up.
Very inactive, I think, when it comes
on this
to
issue. Right, he's the architect of our current system, right?
Absolutely.
Right, but check this out. So infrastructure, you know, these things he ran on. Infrastructure, did that. Computer chips, did that.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change, did that. Gun control to the extent that he could impact that.
With executive
order, did that. Student loan debt to a certain degree, did that.
Mm-hmm.
But this, Mr. Biden, is your issue. This is you can do by executive order. You do not need congressional collaboration to do this.
Really?
Right? No, by executive order. Yeah. He has the clemency power to pin.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? That's the easiest and the best way right now.
And we need you to do that. We need you to commute sentences. We need you to reunite American families like ours, the joy that we feel in, you know, just to be reconnected.
Because all of this is on him directly.
Oh, it's his.
The 86 mandatory minimum sentencing, the 88 crack laws, 94 crime bills.
Right,
absolutely.
You got it.
Do it,
everything.
Joe. Like, for real. Mm-hmm. Like, it's his to do, and it's time to do it. I went to an event at the Justice Department. What was that, Pop? About 3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago we went.
And then I say this all, like, I'm glad that those 31 families have been reunited.
But come on, man. Only 31 pardons or commutations.
Come on.
31, you got thousands of people languishing under these hard sentences, man, for crack cocaine and mandatory minimum
and
sentences.
They've done their time.
They've done
That's
their
the
time.
Point.
More than their time.
Right, so it's not like, it's not a get out of jail free card. We're talking about people that have done 25, 30,
need to
30
know
years.
They've Come done on. Their time, more than their time.
Yeah. Shouldn't have never got that much time.
The reason I think Biden should make this a main issue is because, number one, he was the architect of all of those bills, but he's admitted to it. Like when we had him on Breakfast Club, you know, people always get caught up in the "you ain't black" comment, but there was a moment when I'm talking to him about righting his wrongs of mass incarceration, you know, with the 94 crime bill. And he was like, it wasn't the 94 crime bill. It was the 86 mandatory minimum sentence.
Yeah.
And I was like, you wrote that
even
too?
Better. Yeah, it's even better.
That's the point.
That conversation happened in the interview.
And what you get out of that is the destabilization, in my opinion, the greatest destabilization or the destabilizer of in communities like ours. No matter who lives there, right? If you got, it took people out of the community. Yes, people should have been held accountable. Even in the Free Tony Lewis movement, I never said he wasn't no political prison. I never was like, he should have never went to jail. His ass should have went to jail, but just not for that.
And that's real. That's real. I should have went to prison.
Like and we
I'm
from
mad
the
enough
street.
To accept my responsibility. Right, I should have went to prison,
that.
But not for the rest of my life, man.
Yeah.
Hell no.
And it's like one of those situations where you can really do that. It should be a criteria. The other thing is, people should not have to go before these judges. And it depending on what side of the bed they woke up on, your freedom is based on that.
That's right. Yeah.
It should be if you did this amount of time, you've shown rehabilitation, you should do it. The other part of it, though, for President Biden and VP Harris, listen, not only should people be reunited with their families, but you guys should take the steps to make the federal workforce, which I'm a part of, the federal workforce a model for second chance hiring. See, we got to clear up some of these burdens. My father did 34 years, but there's still places he can't work and can't live. Think about that.
Right.
I mean, so
you're still technically in jail, you know, in some type of way.
Exactly.
Institutionalized.
There's no question about it. Yeah. And if he don't got me, right, you know, to navigate this new world after 34 years, you know what I'm saying, and trying to find your way. But I work in that. I deal with guys who don't have a me.
Yeah.
Who don't have stability. They got to release to homeless shelters and jobs that they qualify for but can't get them after serving their debt to society. Like, we need to really foster a culture of redemption. You know, if we really want public safety, if we really want communities to thrive and things of that nature.
Right.
And I think the this administration should lead with that on both fronts.
I agree.
Yeah, and it need to happen, like, now.
Mr. Lewis Sr., how did you feel watching your son, your namesake, be out here fighting for you,
man,
in that way?
That's what kept me going, man. So much pride, so much joy. I get emotional, man, because it's hard for me to explain, but me and my son, we talk about it all the time. So many different experiences. Guys coming into prison, man, your son helped me get a job, but I messed up because I went back on drugs, but he helped me. Then at the end, I'm ready to get out next month. Can you hook me back up with him? I was like, man, I'll give him your name. But my son be remembering these guys, man. And also, I read your son's book. It inspired me so much. You know, Slug. You know, his book, Slug. Just a wonderful life guide, you know, especially for us, you know, coming up in the same hood and the black community. But just so much inspiration. I'm so proud of him.
Mm-hmm.
And to top it off, we're getting his dad free, because he didn't help to get a lot of other people free. And I was like, son, where did they go get me? You know, because a lot of things that he tried to, legislation he tried to get changed or enacted, we was always looking at it, thinking it was going to help us, like drug minus two.
That was the first thing we said we got denied. I mean, the drugs minus two thing was something was very, you know.
And we was almost
sure. Drugs minus two?
It was the legislation that, well, the Senate Commission passed an enactment saying that all drugs, you was eligible for a 2-point reduction no matter what the drugs was or what the amount was. And
to combat the 86 mandatory minimum.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was and something.
So, yeah, and everybody was benefiting. So we put our motion in and said, oh, you was fighting for that, son. The dad should get it, put the motion in. Judge, get it. Denied. Denied how? Oh, you had too much crack cocaine. Too much. Y'all said all drugs minus two, no matter what. But for me, it was always some technicality that, you know, even the first crack cocaine, it was 2 points minus two. That was separate from the two points minus drugs. But the crack one, we got denied on that too. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah. So it's been multiple things that, you know, and actually on the drugs minus two, again, you know, shout out, you know, the pusher. He helped. We did it right. I spoke about that when I was up here 5 years ago. But even, you know, for context, for a lot of the listeners, like you know, a lot of people heard, like, Big Meech got a reduction. That's what he got.
Yeah, Big Meech got based on the 2-point reduction. Gotcha.
He and got I'm the 2-point, like, you know what I'm saying? What the, we, so something that we helped push through, you know,
and
like
Brittany,
that.
Brittany got the 2-point for him.
Brittany was his attorney as well.
Wow.
Yeah, Big Meech, because she hit amazing, me and said, yeah, I got Big Meech. I think he got, like, off the 2 points, maybe 7 years off his sentence.
Yeah,
got six left.
Yeah,
and yeah, but they denied me, you know. Yeah, so yeah. For the same thing, but it was all
but the
good.
The judges had the discretion, and that's the other thing about these things with the mandatory minimums. The judge ain't had no discretion. If you met a certain guideline, they had to give you that amount of time.
Right.
But now in the thing that was supposed to bring relief based on the mandatory minimums, the judge got full discretion. I felt like that was sort of ironic, you know? Now, if you got like a I don't want to use the term left no more because this is getting wild. But if you got a judge that's more for those things, then yeah, you in good shape. But if you got a conservative judge, a hardline, you're like, man, I'm not like trying to hit that.
Yeah,
he's going, nah, this wasn't for people like him.
Yeah.
And the guys that was considered to be leaders. And imagine me as an activist, as an advocate, and all of, I'm seeing this happening around me all the time. Everything that I'm helping to push, I'm not the sole guy responsible, but I'm lending my influence. And my dad can't benefit from it.
Yeah.
Right.
But I couldn't stop, though. You know what I mean? I knew that there's no way my father was going to die in prison. But we up against the federal government, the United States government. But I just always felt, and with the push of my, you know, my D.C. community and abroad, you know, we were able to make this happen. And I hope this, you know, this hope for the 10 million children in this country that have had an incarcerated parent, for people that's in prison. But I think the main thing for me, not to be talking too much, but I think it's so important.
That's what you're here for, bro.
It's so important to note, though, that, you know, it's also, my dad had two, in 34 years, only like two infractions. He did things to get better. He did things to help other inmates. He did things to help our community. So it wasn't just me. His actions as a man, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, could have been, you know, turned up and then doing all kinds
of order. There's a lot going on in prison that even if you don't want to get turned up, it's sometimes you're forced
you
to.
Just get
and being from
it.
DC, we, you know, I love my homies, but we stay in stuff in prison, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then Baltimore,
mess.
They collaborated.
Yeah. Mess.
I know, because when I used to be in the prison, it was crazy. So I can relate, you know, but I came home, so.
So, what? Yes, for real, you was...
Don't listen.
Every four minutes. I know I'm sure she heard me.
I just did 9 months. I ain't do, you know.
No, but
I ain't 9 months.
Know,
you know, I was letting people know, don't play with me out here, you know.
Why was you the only person still serving time?
Yeah,
that's what we was trying to figure out, you know. That's what we was trying to figure out. Why was I the only? Everybody was like, every time I call home, call friends, like, Tom, what the fuck? Why they letting all your co defenders gone? Why you the only one? Yeah. Why you the only one? I'm like, man, I'm fighting. That's all I can say. I don't know why I'm the only one.
Well, because they look at you as the leader. Kingpin.
Yeah.
Well, with him, Rafael Edmond.
Rafael Edmond.
You know,
yeah.
But you know what he did? So he was already set to come home whenever, no matter what. But I had to fight. My son had to. If it don't be for my son, I'd be still languishing in prison.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
When you watch the shows like the Snowfalls and the BML, because I heard you say earlier you don't want to glorify it, but
right.
How do you tell your story without glorifying
right. it? Right. See, I tell the story, but then even in the middle or at the end, I say I'm not glorifying what I'm saying, and I'm not. But it's the truth.
Yeah.
I got to tell the truth, you know, good or bad, but still, I'm not glorifying. If I had the opportunity to do it all different, I would do it different. I wouldn't sell drugs. I wouldn't have broken the law.
Yeah.
I would have tried to find another way, but.
But I'm gonna say I'm gonna say this though. When you compare, you know what I'm saying? Like all them up, them other stories, and I say it's all deference and humility, but all them other stories ain't got a me.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Like and this fiction, but I'm saying it's like I'm with Vito wanting Michael to become. Like this the godfather in real life. This I took the family legit. You ain't got this in them other stories.
That's real. Yeah.
And that's serious. No, and not to mention, you know, I climbed the crooked ladder and sent back down the straight one. In my city, You know what I'm saying? You'd be hard pressed to find somebody that's helped more people. Yeah. And I'm talking about people from this circumstance. Mm-hmm. People, when people and all through federal prison, DC guys, they when they come home, they say, I gotta see Tony Lewis Jr. I got because he gonna help me. Yeah. And that's real. You know what I'm saying? And that's the part that sometimes
they hound me every day in prison. When, when every time that somebody get ready to get out 6 months before, they might ain't said nothing to me the whole time they've been in the unit. Hey, Tony, I've been meaning to talk to you, man. What your son still helping people get them jobs? I said, yeah, he's still helping people get them. Man, can you hook me? Here go my information. Can you? I said, I'll see what I can do. But I said, I'm watching your action. I tell a lot of times when I see how you moving here, and then you come to me to try to get me to reference you to my son. But I've been seeing how you've been moving, and if you ain't moving the right way, I'm not doing that.
That's gonna waste
my son's name goes on everything that he does when when he connected and trying to get people employment or housing or you know or whatever the case may be. And I'm not putting no bad people when I've been watching you for the last year or two moving in here the way that you move. No, I can't do that.
I just be in awe of how God works because you know, you had an unfortunate circumstance because of some poor choices, but then that became your life's work, your purpose.
And we always be saying that to each other. It's crazy.
It really is, bro. And I'm saying I live, it's just so many dynamics. It's like I'm saying, I don't even. Growing up, I ain't never moved. I'm on hand. You know what I'm saying? I live on the same block. You know what I'm saying? And to do it from there, that the whole community have watched my journey. I ain't go away to college. I went to college, went to our local university, but I ain't go away to school. Everything I did, and I lost so many friends, fam, like the streets to the, you know, gun violence and prison and, you know what I'm saying?
Overdose,
all that. And it still impacts my life, but still every day, you know, still getting up to help my people. And then we talked about DC's gentrification and the Nader Washingtonian, you know, even my me and my homegirl, my partner Angel Gregorio.
Angel, big ups to Angel.
Yeah, man. You know, we started this whole thing DC Natives Day just to force our city to recognize people that grew up in DC because it's like all the energy was focused on all the people moving to the city. You know,
right?
And we need a part of the, some of the progression. And so with that though, it's like I've realized that has brought me a lot of clarity though. That's why them bullets ain't hit me. That's why when my friends went to jail on conspiracy, they ain't grabbed me. You know, that was my purpose. And to now have him beside me now, you know, I'm so excited about what the future holds for us and our city and our family.
This is going to be like the biggest thing for your daughters though.
Yeah.
Like seeing that they 6 and 9, you said.
Yeah.
Seeing that, you know what I'm saying? Just like their standards are gonna be so high for these black men.
Yeah. Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And that's really, really good. Yeah. Like you could have, like I'm serious, you could have really went another way with this, you know, but your daughters are gonna always you're a king. Yeah. You're gonna be a king, you know, to them for the rest of their life.
And they got granddaddy back.
Babysitting.
Babysitting them, going to school with them, going to gymnastic practice.
Doing all
just
that.
Just everything, anything they want, pop up here, and I'm loving it.
Yeah.
That's what I dreamt about.
Did they provide you with any resources, like mental health resources for, you know, for you to help you adjust? And I'm sure you got PTSD that you're dealing with. Like, I can imagine.
It's like, you know, I know that the city has those things, but you got to go and you got to go and try to get them. It's not like how it should be that the minute you hit that, just come on over here.
We have access to them. We going to engage them too.
Yeah,
and again, I've been part of that ecosystem.
That's the re-entry,
to help build the that ecosystem. So we, you know, in the program that I, you know, designed it, you know, we had a joint where it's crazy. You know, we ain't got no hat. We already, you know, everybody, you do, you break a local law, federal law, you do go to the feds in D.C. But we don't even have a halfway house now. So our halfway house is actually people go to Baltimore.
Baltimore.
So, but a program I did out there with Angel, we actually the bedrock of the program was 1-on-1 therapy. That's really, you know, I want us to do family therapy. We just been running around the first 60 days, but that's definitely a part of it, right? And I salute, I appreciate, you know, all the push you've been doing wellness and mental health. You know, as growing up as a kid with a mom that dealt with mental health, and I'm the only, like I said, I'm the only child. I went through all that with my mother, and to this day, right? I understand the value of that. And to destigmatize that for our community is so important, to make it accessible and affordable and to make you not crazy. Like we all need, I tell youngers all the time, you break your ankle, you be hooping. If you break your ankle, you can just go in the house and just lay on the bed and let that joint heal. Now you go to the doctor.
That's right.
So we got to look at mental health in that same way. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely something that we know is necessary in the trauma that black men and women all across this country has experienced via incarceration is something I think that's definitely something that we don't talk about enough. I'm saying that shit real.
What's next for y'all, man?
Man, the Don't Get Taken movement. Anti-incarceration, anti-violence movement. Don't get taken. What's to all mean? The youngins out there, exactly that. You know, don't put yourself in a position where you get taken either from the community via criminal justice system or, you know, obviously the cemetery. Too much violence and carjacking.
Gotta put the guns down, young people. We got to. Gotta put the guns down.
Well, Pop, what you always say? You can't tell them the what would you say how you be putting
it? Well, we can't ask them to put the guns down without picking something up. And it gotta be a job or training or some type of more opportunity. And I always say this to our good mayor, Mayor Bowser, and the DC City Council. We need more opportunities. The young people need more opportunities, more jobs, more training. If we want to put the guns down,
and if they've been in trouble, that's the other part. Just to the barrier piece, and in DC and everywhere else, if people made a mistake, they paid their debt. We cannot continue to hold them like put that a scarlet letter on them, and they can't engage because then the cities or the counties or the towns, whatever, create these quote unquote pathways or these opportunities. But if you got a criminal record, you can't do it. That's who you think needed the most.
Yeah,
you understand what I'm saying? Right. And that definitely go for a place like Baltimore and New York and Philadelphia, Atlanta, wherever. You know what I'm saying?
Everywhere.
So what am I left to do? Right. And my baby crown on them lights still got to be on. You know. So we got to get people to listen. Hopelessness is probably the most powerful thing there is, right? And so when we start talking about our young people in our communities, if I've accepted death and I've accepted that death or incarceration is going to be my fate, and in some instances that my glory, you cannot deter me with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot deter me with something I've already accepted is going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Dang. So what we got to do is young rebuild people feel like that hope. We got to, and hopefully this is make people feel hopeful, but we got to create systems that promote hope in these communities, that there is something other than the street. You know what I'm saying? And really for me, I feel like you can't aim that at youth. You have to aim that at family, because the adults are destabilized. What you think will happen to the youth?
The youth, right. Exactly.
So any youngin' in trouble, look at you and ask, who does he belong to? What's the state of that household? Mm-hmm. That's the answers right there. So we got to attack that, in my opinion.
How do we support the Don't Get Taken movement?
Right now, man, we really just trying to brand it, put it out in consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, I got it in slug.
Being here today.
Being here today, allowing, talking about it.
And Jess, we was just talking about it.
We was at school yesterday talking
my
to
alma mater.
The youth. Dunbar
senior high.
For real. Yeah.
It was amazing.
And we establishing design and programming. We're going to be in community. Mm-hmm. We're going to be trying to work on a PSA that's going to go out on social media. Mm-hmm. You know, pushing Don't Get Taken. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can, you know, get partners around it and really build it up to not just something in DC, but really a national movement, about for our young people, man. Don't get taken, man.
Yeah. Any way we can help, let us know, man.
Definitely. Yeah. I have one last question. So I know you say you don't want to ever glorify what you did, you know what I'm saying? But would you ever do a story? Mm. If somebody came to you and said, look, everybody else got their story. Everybody got, you know what I'm saying?
No question.
Yeah. People know
question.
You.
That's what we want to do.
Know you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like you said, everybody else's story, is the difference between is there is no you.
Exactly.
People don't have a you. So would you be, because this would be the first story like this on TV.
Slug right there. Yeah, slug right there.
For sure.
For
sure. Thank you for that.
I hope
you're
willing to tell it, though. That's the thing. Is America, do America want to tell a story like this one? A story that ends the right way of a person, that people that did it the right way. Mm. That's the question.
And we still fighting for the men that's left behind. Mm. We still fighting the family, black family.
Spielberg, Kenya Burns, Tyler Perry, 50 Cent.
Listen, somebody will do it. Yeah. It ain't got to be them. Somebody will do it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Tony bring up a good point, though. If they do it, then they got to highlight the fact that you out here doing God's work.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know if they want people.
Everybody want the drama. They want all the drama, you know? Yeah.
You're helping too many people.
Yeah.
But like you say, just somebody want to do it, somebody will do it, and somebody's going to.
Definitely
yeah.
Going to it though.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's why I wanted to know.
Appreciate y'all for
appreciate word, man. Y'all for sure.
You get Jessica and play one of your drug mules or something from back in the day.
Oh,
again, this is
definitely Jessica.
I know you
she can
pretty,
play any
I know you
role.
Got some pretty
she,
girls from Baltimore
that's what
running
I'm saying,
for
man. She
I know
can
you
play
did,
any
though.
Role. Yeah.
I know you
yeah,
did.
She's welcome. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Tony Lewis Jr., Tony Lewis Sr., Tony, man, I've always respected the work you do, and now I'm glad you got your father out here doing it with you, man.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate
we appreciate
y'all.
You
know that.
It's the Breakfast Club.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.